let me in. Shiba chiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba chiba. Open up your soul. Shiba chiba. Let me find that part of you. The part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something, or in today's case, understand and embrace something. Now, a lot of people out there need sometimes just a little bit of help to kind of navigate the complexities of the world in terms of childcare or trying to get back into the workforce or trying to understand benefits, and it can be overwhelming. Fortunately, there are places all over the world that help you, that their job is to help you try and navigate all of those things. Some of those places are here in San Francisco, and we are fortunate that I've got one of the presidents and CEOs of one of the organizations that does such things. I'd like to welcome president of the Felton Institute, Al Gilbert. Hello.
Hi, Marilyn. Pleasure being here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you for being here. So before we get into all of the types of services that you offer, give me a little bit of background about the Felton Institute.
Felton is 134 years old as a nonprofit agency serving people in San Francisco.
Okay.
We took the Felton name about 15 years ago, and prior to that, we were Family Service Agency of San Francisco.
Okay.
So some people have said that we've never heard about Felton, but we changed names. We changed names because the focus of our work was shifting as well. So mm-hmm. we really wanted to focus in on how we could quantify outcomes, improved outcomes for the people we serve. So we wanted to really focus in on changing the model of delivery or adjusting it so that we had even more evidence-based trained staff, evidence-informed staff, and that we had data to support progress so that we wouldn't think we were doing well, but the clients we serve were actually demonstrating the improvements that we were all seeking.
So what drove that desire to have that those metrics?
I got involved with Felton in 2002. They mm-hmm. were struggling as an agency, and I was a turnaround consultant. So they brought me in to save the agency. So for the next couple of years, we did a lot of work to do that. Mm-hmm. And at that point, there was a discussion about what the agency would do going forward, given the fact that we had put it on kind of a solid foundation at that point. Mm-hmm. But we only had 10 computers and 170 staff. So we just needed to refresh. Mm-hmm. And so part of that discussion was, how could a community-based organization drive change?
Okay.
Instead of it coming from universities or coming from government agencies, when you're in the community doing the work, the question is, what would it take for us to have the same kind of voice? What kind of data would we need mm-hmm. to be able to tell the story? What kind of models would we need to put in place so that we could definitively talk about changing the way services are being provided more effectively in the inner city?
Now, is that something that most nonprofits strive for, or is that something that came out of your dealings as a consultant?
There are so many incredible nonprofits doing important work here in San Francisco. Part of the data focus mm-hmm. and part of the modeling focus was definitely something that I'm attached to. From a background standpoint, I used to work with PricewaterhouseCoopers and then ran a international reporting unit for Bank of America and worked with lots of companies. Mm-hmm. And so my perspective is always, how can we scale? First of all, how can we demonstrate improved outcomes in our community? Mm-hmm. And then secondarily, how can we scale those so that we can share that success with other people around the country. To do that, we just felt like we needed it not to be person specific, like you do incredible work or somebody else does incredible work, but we can't replicate you, but we could replicate your system, your structure. And so we sought to create that kind of an infrastructure with research, training, and evaluation division. We were the first company to build an electronic health record on the Salesforce.com platform because we wanted to track our data in ways that existing systems wouldn't allow us to do that. So it's been an exciting process for us.
One of the things that I've noticed in working in the nonprofit sphere is that the things that you sort of take for granted working in the corporate sector, they don't apply because in the corporate sector, you have all these people, you have these systems that are already in place, already set up. When you're in the nonprofit, you have people who maybe have never even been in the corporate field and they're hearing for the first time about things like setting up a filing system or branding standards and things like that. So what has been one of the things that when you came from the private sector to the nonprofit sector, what are some of the things that you personally had to learn?
As a consultant, I'd probably been a consultant for about 30 years before this became one of my contracts. So at that point, I had worked with starting a lot of nonprofit organizations.
So you already had the experience.
Companies. I have a master's in entrepreneurship. So probably started like 21, 22 businesses with other people. So, of course, it's always kind of a question about how can we, with limited resources, particularly the communities that I work with and the African-American community that I'm a part of and work with, is that how can we use limited resources to scale? So being in the for-profit environment, coming to the nonprofit space, I just felt that the voices of the black CBOs weren't really that strong. And I felt like people wouldn't believe the fact that we're doing really incredible work. So my determination from the beginning was to lay an infrastructure so that we could prove and demonstrate that our outcomes were superior to the work that was currently being done in the community, not just by CBOs, but from corporations as well. Because if, in fact, we've solved the problem, why is the community struggling? And so our determination was to say, let's do things with the intent of reaching high levels of success and then being able to demonstrate the fact that you can do this too. Growing up in Cleveland during the riots many years ago, the only two companies that existed after the fires and the burnings and all the stuff that went on were Burger King and McDonald's. And so one of the things that I realized growing up, I was like, where are the other businesses and why can't other businesses survive? And then I recognized that those businesses, the one that I see and saw and the ones that I worked in briefly when I was trying to get some income and employment, had very rigorous kind of structures that they followed so that whenever you travel around the world, you can expect the same kind of environment. So I was wondering if we take and create successful engagement models and we know what it takes to strengthen our community, then could we replicate that as well? So the premise that I started with was saying, I think so. And so I want data. So we want systems. One of the things that we decided to do was to focus in on the full service partnerships in San Francisco.
And what is that?
Which are what we call FSPs. And what they are is the 5150 individuals. So individuals who are severely struggling with mental health and on the highest acuity level. And many of them are arrested 40 or 50 times a year because they're laying out on the street and they're incapacitated. And somebody calls the police. The police pick them up, take them to the hospital. But no, their mental illness and their other challenges aren't really being addressed. So then consequently, you put the person, you release the person because you don't want them to stay in custody. But you haven't they don't have a place to go. So you put them back on the street and then they're arrested again. So the goal that I focus on was to say, if we started with a focus of the highest acuity individuals, meaning that we would have to have psychologists, we would have to have psychiatrists, we'd have to have MFTs and LCSWs. If we focused in on that work, then that would be our protection in this space, because we're doing the highest level of acuity and everybody else wouldn't try and do that work.
And what's acuity for our listening audience?
It means the highest level of challenge.
Okay.
And mental illness, when I say the acuity part. And so we're the only agency still in San Francisco that has the full service partnerships in all age groups, which is the transitional age youth, the adult, and the older adult age groups. And then consequently, intensive case management is almost a step down in terms of care. And then mild to moderate mental illness is also a step down. But in focusing on the highest level, we focused in on building an infrastructure that would allow us to be strong with our mental health services. And that's been something that we've benefited from all the way back to 2002.
Okay, so we're talking about the mental health services. And do those have a special name within the Felton Institute umbrella organization, I guess?
You mean the programs, the work?
Yeah.
So Felton is different so many ways, but one of the ways that Felton is a different organization is we serve people from, we serve people from birth to their later years.
Okay.
And it makes us complicated to explain because if we were an organization that served children, then it would be easier to talk about us. If we were just serving older adults, it would be easy to talk about. But serving everybody in the continuum makes it a difficult conversation because it has its advantages and disadvantages.
And what are those?
So the advantage is that most of the time when you engage a child who has autism or a child who has a physical disability and they're going to one of our schools for our early child care sites, 0 to 5, and we serve in one of our sites 250 children some with disabilities, mainstreamed with regular children in the same community and environment, which has its benefits in many ways for everybody involved. But when you serve that child, it's not just the child. It's also the child's parents. It's also the support structure that supports them. When you deal with somebody who's schizophrenic later on in life, having a bipolar disorder or schizophrenic, then you're also – they're impacting the whole community of individuals that they're living with and surrounded by. The same with aging, because aging – needs a lot of support and impacts the family in a lot of other ways as well. So what we found out was by serving all of the age groups, we were able to continue to support the entire family, which looked more like supporting the community because it was, you know, like I said, you can't just serve the child without supporting the family.
Right. So talk about a little bit about how you find the people to be in these programs and how people can actually find these programs.
So a great place is Felton.org.
Okay, that's your website.
That's our website. And if you go there, one of the challenges with our website is that it's full of so much content.
Sure.
So if you wanted to find the work that we're doing with older adults, we have over 60 programs right now.
Wow.
And we're in 7 counties. And so, again, it's not a simple conversation to talk about the scale of programs that we provide.
Okay. Well, let's just talk about the programs in San Francisco. So I know that you do a thing about getting seniors back into the workplace. I know you have something for foster grandparents. Can you talk a little, just give us a little snippet of about these different programs that you offer?
Okay. So there's
just for San Francisco.
Quite a few exciting ones.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. We're speaking with Al Gilbert, who is the president and CEO of Felton Institute, which houses over 70 organizations that help communities. So go ahead.
Thank you, ma'am. So one of our programs is called the CSEMP program, and it's a senior employment program. Pretty exciting program because it's staffed by seniors.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a very lean administrative structure where we have one person from our agency, and then that person is supported with a whole structure of managers that come from the senior community who are actually seeking employment. So they actually work with coaching other seniors who are also seeking employment. And it's been a fantastic program for us. We have such a large success rate in terms of placing seniors, both in our agency and externally, most of which are placed externally at the places where they do a year, 2 year kind of an internship for the sake of being employed. And that program, we recently had a delegation visit us from Taipei. And we also had a delegation from South Korea that came about a month ago. And both of them came to visit our older adult program, so one that you're talking about, that we're talking about right now, because of how we engage with seniors, the success rate in terms of placing them, and how we value their contribution. And what's exciting about it is that we found that many of those individuals, not only are they experienced and not only are they skilled, not only are they patient, not only are they compassionate, but, you know, they are a huge resource and people look right over them. And those are even people who've been previously incarcerated. All of those individuals have quite a contribution that they can make, and we support them with that work.
And I know from experience that one of the things you guys do is, even though it's an internship for the company that they're going to, they still receive a salary to intern at those companies. So it's sort of a win-win for everyone altogether. So,
and it's important. It goes back to the way I look at the nonprofit space, is that a win-win isn't just an emotional win-win. It's actually economic. And so that's one of the keys that has supported Felton's growth, is that I want our services to be paid for, respected, and it's great when those paid internships do work on behalf, you know, in support of the company and the individuals as well. And then we have like the Ombudsman Program, and our Ombudsman Program supports seniors who are living in facilities throughout the Bay. And many of the people who Felton serves, particularly because of the funding we receive, are people who are low income. And that's just the way public funding works. And so it's really great to be able to, our focus and goal from the beginning is to focus on how we can provide services that are the best services that money can buy, even though we're serving a community who's under-resourced. And that is something that, there was recently an interview that was on KQED, and they were talking about serving people with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, and the fact that the focus of the conversation was Kaiser and Blue Cross, Sutter, and the other large service providers don't pay for services for schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. And Felton provides the best program in the state on, you know, people who are early onset schizophrenia and bipolar. And so the focus was, how come people who belong to all of these paid systems can't get the services that Felton's providing to basically under-resourced individuals, which to us was pretty exciting to hear the fact that we had the highest quality services that money can buy, and people who have the money are trying to figure out how to get access to the services that we're providing people.
So we've touched on seniors, we've touched on people with mental health issues. What other communities do you do? I think I saw that you help families who are low-income families. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So it's interesting when you said that. I was trying to figure out what set of programs that I was going to talk about. So I should start with our early child care programs, because we have a number of different centers. We have a large one at on Bryant Street. We have another one, MLK, Martin Luther King Center, Sojourner Truth. We have a number of early child care sites where we serve children 3 to 5 or now 0 to 5 because we're adding that to our system of care. But we also serve their moms because we have a program, TAP, which is a teenage parenting program, and it focuses on young pregnant teens who have had children very young, and it focuses on supporting them secure their GEDs, their high school degrees, while they raise their children in our center, and being able to support and nurse those children during their breaks, working with the family structure that supports them, and then helping them get employment as well. But so a couple of things. San Francisco, Felton is San Francisco Suicide Prevention, which is the city and county of San Francisco's hotline, suicide hotline. And we've been doing that for 45 years or so. In terms of that, we're also the people who run the 988 Center, which is the call center for people who are having mental health emergencies. That was just rolled out nationally across the country. We're also providing those kind of crisis services, mental health around-the-clock services in a couple of counties outside of San Francisco, where we're actually doing that 24/7. In San Francisco, we actually have transitional housing that we're doing, a lot of that in the Bayview, and supporting individuals who were at risk during COVID. And we, the city and county of San Francisco, under the mayor's direction, created some communities which were really well structured, and so we have now been engaged to support those communities and those individuals basically get access to services when they need it, and to also secure opportunities that will allow them to have stable housing when they used to be homeless.
Nice, nice. Now, I know that there are people, I know that there's a program for people who maybe people don't know what kind of benefits they're eligible for, or they're worried about how getting back into the workplace will affect their benefits. So I know that there's like a benefits to work program. I know that there's a back to work program. What programs are you working on right now that you want to make sure our listening audience is aware of?
So thank you for asking that. And I had to smile when you asked the question because I'm particularly attached to so many of our programs that we have
all
because
your babies.
It's been like 21 years. And so it's like a lot of launching that we've done. And we're so proud of what we've accomplished. But, you know, there's some a flexible program. There's some other programs that are specifically designed to even the work that we do on the ombudsman side is to make sure that people have access to the kind of care that is available. But we actually have a lot of programs to do that. So I think one of the ways that we try and encourage people to go find it is to look at the age group that they're working on, because we have children, youth, and family. We have TAY. We have transitional age youth. We have adults. We have older adults. And we broke our business into those kinds of segments kind of because that's the way funding happens as well. But again, people have different needs at different times, and we want to make sure that we support seniors getting access to care, people finding support for older adults. We want to make sure that they get access to education for their children, particularly when they're working parents and they've got limited income. They're making small amounts of salary, but they still want to support their kids, and they can't find help for the child that they can afford, so we have to match that with their needs. We have a lot of people coming out of the incarceration system, and then they're reengaging. So we've got to make sure that they get housing, access to support in terms of coaching, in terms of reengaging with their family and all of that. Sometimes there's a lot of trauma that goes on, so we've got to make sure that they get support with that as well. And then secondarily, getting access to employment is not the easiest thing to do once you've been incarcerated. So we've had a, you know, a great deal of success hiring individuals and creating career paths for them that who had been previously incarcerated, but also working with other organizations that do a lot of work in a lot of different ways with exactly what you're talking about, how to get them access to benefits and support. So as a community, we work with making sure that that happens.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I know we've talked about the website, felton.org. I first heard about Felton by going to the public library, and I saw a flyer lying around. So for those people out there who maybe aren't as tech savvy as other people, where can they find out more about the organization?
I'm going to make sure that you share our phone number.
Sure, which is 415-474-7310.
I know you wanted to do that, so I'll just make sure. But in addition to that, many of the people who come to Felton for services are referred through the City and County of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually a lot of entry points because all of our programs, programs that support housing and supportive homelessness and supportive housing,
mm-hmm.
Programs that are from the Department of Public Health, programs who are from early child care. All of those systems are set up so that people who are in need of support come to the city, and then the city refers them to us for services. So there's a lot of other ways by reaching out to kind of the public systems,
mm-hmm.
To get support by Felton as well. And we have one headquarters at 1500 Franklin, where it's kind of a service site that people can come to as well. And then we have another location at 1005 Atlantic in Alameda, the city of Alameda, where people can go to our other corporate headquarters. So we have two kind of corporate headquarters, one in San Francisco and one in Alameda.
And they should call first to make an appointment to come in?
You know they should. But if anybody needs to, you know, they can show up as well and we'll support them.
All right. Well, Al Gilbert, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. And one more time for our listening audience, the number if you want to reach out to the Felton Institute is 415-474-7310. And I'll let you announce the website and maybe a little bit about how to navigate it.
Well, felton.org, mm-hmm. Go there, about us, and then just explore all of the programs that we have. Look at our newsletters because it gives you a real good flavor of what we do. And thank you so much because I'm so honored to be here at KPOOP 51 years, I think it is, of providing services. And I'm just so honored with the work that you've done. And maybe we can have the kind of impact that you have on
thank
the community.
You. Thank you. All right, people of Earth, you probably know someone or maybe you're that person who needs some help. So why don't you check out felton.org and you can get help for yourself. You can get help for people in your family. You can do all the things that one needs to do. Coming up next, I've got some people who are going to be doing the musical The Addams Family. So please stay tuned.
Swallow your pride if I have failed. somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. You just call on me, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on. If there is a load you have to bear that you can't carry, I'm right up the road. I'll share your load if you just call.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO, San Francisco. That was Bill Withers and Lean on Me. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, you, as I mentioned last week, you know I love me some Addams Family, and there's a musical of it. And here to talk about it, I'm going to say this is going to be Morticia. Welcome, Allison Peltz. Hello.
Hi there. Great to be here.
So tell me a little bit about, when did you first start acting?
Oh, goodness. I grew up actually in the East Bay, and I have been singing, acting, and dancing since I was about 5 years old.
Nice.
And yes, all sorts of, and I've performed all over the Bay Area, California, the country, and in Europe as well.
Wow. Were you one of those musical theater kids that would break out into song and your friends would be like, shut up, because I was one of those?
Yes. And I've raised two daughters that are also the same. So
nice. So you find yourself in a tight-fitting kind of octopus dress as Morticia.
Yes.
Adams. So tell us a little bit about this, the Addams Family.
Well, it's a really, really fun musical, and of course it has the cast of characters that we all know and love from the TV show, the movies, and now Wednesday series.
Mm-hmm.
They're all grown up. The kids are grown up. Wednesday's now old enough to be falling in love. And so that's kind of one of the themes of the show. And how the family deals with this. And it's a family that's different from the Addams Family. So there's also themes of, quote unquote, what is normal, leaning into being accepting of and learning from people who are different than you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a lot of fun themes besides just all the kookiness that goes along with the Addams Family and their home and all
right.
of that. And lots of big group dance numbers.
Nice. What are some of the, can you tell us some of the titles of some of the songs you guys will be singing and dancing to?
Well, When You're an Addams.
Okay.
And that's a really, it's a fun song with the Addams and then their ancestors who come out to once a year to celebrate life with them. And then they end up being a big part of the driving force of everything that goes on in the whole show. There's a big tango at the end with
Ooh.
Gomez and Morticia and the ancestors.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to be really fun. The actor, Bruce Vieira, who's playing Gomez, and I have known each other for 20 years, and this is like the fourth show we've done together and the first time we've really danced together on stage.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned Bruce Vieira as Gomez and you, Allison, are Morticia. Is there a cousin It?
There is a cousin It.
Oh,
and Cousin It is going to be played by four youth from the community. So each weekend it'll be a different person playing Cousin It.
Oh, is it like a little kid each time?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's awesome.
How they were able to solve that problem. And it's really fun because, yeah, one of the cousins, it is the granddaughter of our musical director. So, and the rest are all really connected with the theater company and the show.
I love that. And because it's Cousin It, they don't have to memorize any lines. They can just go.
They're just adorable. Yes,
I love that. I love that. Yes. So you've got a Cousin It. You've got, do you have Thing?
There, Thing makes a brief cameo.
Okay.
And then there's Lurch, of course, and both Wednesday and Pugsley, and let's see, and then there's the family, the Beinekes, who are the family of Lucas, who is the love interest of Wednesday.
Okay.
So we have Grandma and of course Fester.
Of course. Now and, you're wearing a super tight dress, and dancing.
Yeah, but there is a hidden secret at the end that allows for the tango.
So, okay.
Yeah. It's a beautiful gown. It's fun. It's very hot, but this is what I do for love. So, yes, and. Yeah, it's just a lot of fun, family friendly. You know, the young people really seem to know the Addams family as much as we all did growing up on the TV show, or at least you know, reruns of the TV show. And so it's a great show. And again, we're kind of running into Halloween season, so
that's
why the company picked it for this time of year.
I remember as a little kid wanting to live, like, I thought they had the coolest house, and I was like, I want to live in the Addams family house. I wouldn't mind them being my family.
Yes. And in this musical, I don't remember this from the TV show, it's set, their house is in Central Park, New York.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's kind of fun, you know, to think that they had this kind of secret house that no one really saw, but this giant mansion existed in the middle of Central Park.
Sure. Well, maybe there was some sort of spell on it so no one could see it, like the, you know, like Grim Old Place in Harry Potter. But I digress. when and where for the Addams Family?
So we are performing. It's a Novato Theater Company producing it, and it's at the Novato Theater Company Playhouse. In Novato, and we run, the preview is September 14th, the official opening is the 15th, and they run on weekends until October 8th. You can get tickets at NovatoTheaterCompany.org.
And where is the Novato, I mean, you say it's in Novato, I see, it's on...
It's on Nave Drive.
Nave Drive, 5420
right
Nave
off the
Drive.
Highway, really easy to get to, we have free parking.
Oh, cool. So if people want to find out more about the show, how would they go about doing that?
Just go to the website.
Which
so
is?
Novato Theater Company, all one word, .org.
And a theater with an E-R as opposed to an R-E.
Yes, and great. Thank you for clarifying that.
Excellent. And if people want to find out more about your storied acting career, how would they go about doing that?
That should be... do we have the bios on the website?
Oh, okay.
Okay. Or on Facebook. I don't have a big, like, following. But they could follow me on Instagram, sure.
And what's your Instagram handle?
It's Allison and the it's Allison and Allison Knerl, and the last name is Peltz, Peltz, and it's all one word.
All right. Well, Allison Peltz, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I want to thank you for letting our listening audience know that the musical exists called The Addams Family.
Exactly. And I hope you can come. And I believe we were going to give away 2 tickets.
Okay. That's what I'm going to do right now then.
Okay.
All right. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. People of Earth, this is your opportunity to win a pair of tickets to go see the Addams Family. So give me a call here, 415-346-5376, and you can win a pair of tickets.
You'll be falling for mine. boxing me. I should warn you, my dear. My heart is a haunted house. Once you're in, you ain't getting out. It's the trap you've been waiting for.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. That's Christina Aguilera, Haunted Heart, which is one of the themes to one of the animated Addams Family series. It's the last Monday of the month. You know what that means. I've got my librarianista du jour. Today, let's welcome the effervescent Lynn Davidson. How you doing?
Hi, Marilyn. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in what's arguably my favorite month of the year, which is the Halloween month, which is October.
Oh, we've got so many fun things at the Maine Children's Center, where I'm the program manager.
Okay.
I'll tell you about those. I'm going to drop a little quick hint about something we have going on in late September, which is September 23rd, which is a Saturday. The Maine Children's Center is hosting PBS Kids Day, and we're going to have, it's a super special event at 10 a.m., and we're going to have all kinds of celebrating great Latinx heritage, and so that's the theme of PBS Kids Day. It's bilingual in English and Spanish. We're going to celebrate literacy, learning, and the Latinx community, so it's going to be super fun, and that is Saturday, September 23rd.
What time?
Oh, go ahead.
What time?
10 o'clock.
Okay. And you dropped out a little bit when you said what the theme was, so could you repeat that?
Yeah, sorry about that. It's a bilingual family event celebrating literacy, learning, and the Latinx community.
Excellent, excellent. And did you see how my brain worked that I completely forgot that the month of September existed because I was so excited about October?
I know, right? I mean, I'm super excited about October, too, because there's Halloween, there's... We'll have some spooky fun at the Maine Children's Center, and I'm sure at some of your branches. But we are planning some special things. But I will get into some things for early October. We have got on Saturday, October the 7th, at 11 a.m., and then a repeat at 11:45. We're going to have the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra come, and they're going to do very first concerts.
Ooh.
And this is this is super special. We've had the partnership with them for years, and they come and do two identical concerts on a Saturday morning, and we will have one of them at 11 a.m., one of them at 11:45 a.m. We ask that people choose one or the other because we're anticipating, as usual, a big crowd. But it's an interactive family experience where kids can really get up close and personal with the instruments of the chamber orchestra, and the musicians are just fabulous. So we are really excited.
I love
that. That's on October the 7th.
I love that because a lot of times, like when you're a little kid, you're not sure what instrument makes what sound. So to be able to go and see them up close and hear it, and you can put those two things together, like, oh, that's what they call the oboe, or that's what they call the flute.
Exactly. And we've seen kids have so much fun doing that. Kids actually get to participate. If they are bold enough to come up out of the audience, I'm sure the chamber orchestra would love to have them participate in some of the activities. But it's a real interactive family event. And so we really encourage people to come and just make a morning of it on Saturday, October the 7th. With us at the Maine Library.
Okay.
And do you want to hear about something else?
I want to hear about everything. And I feel like I derailed you by saying October instead of September. So I want you to know you have free reign to tell people about what's going on in September.
Okay. I will mention September too. Thank you. So let's keep in October for just a minute because on October the 14th, which is also a Saturday, we are going to have a very special family story time. This is going to be our first ever bilingual English-Filipino family story time at the Maine Children's Center.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's in celebration of Filipino American History Month, which is in October.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to love everything about Filipino culture, so I'm very excited that one of our bilingual colleagues is going to join us as the special guest star. Miss Mel will be telling stories in English and Filipino and sharing songs and a sampling of Filipino culture for families. And that's going to be on Saturday, October 14th, and that's at 2 o'clock.
Very nice. We're going to have to make sure to mention that again, because since it's the very first one, I want to make sure people know about that. So when we have you guys on again next month, I'll make sure that we bring that up.
Thank you so much. And yeah, we've got activities throughout September and October. We're also celebrating Viva, which I mentioned as Latinx Heritage Month.
Mm-hmm.
And so in addition to our PBS Kids program on Saturday, September 23rd, we are also going to have a special bilingual Spanish-English family story time, which it will be my pleasure to do. And that's going to be on September the 16th. And that's also a Saturday at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
So that's another internationally focused family story time.
Very nice. Before we talk about any more programs, can you tell our listening audience who they may have children, but they don't necessarily know about the children's library? Tell them a little bit about it.
Oh, I would love to. So all of our branches have children's sections. So if you have kids and you live near a branch, definitely go and enjoy everything they have. They all do children's programming. But the main library, we're the flagship, and so we have a huge space.
Mm-hmm.
We have interactive activities. We have a PlayStation. We have story times on most days of the week.
Mm-hmm.
On Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday mornings at 10:30, we have a young children's and family story program of one type or another.
Mm-hmm.
On Tuesdays, it's bilingual English-Spanish. On Thursdays, it's bilingual English-Cantonese. We have our regular Saturday story times at 2 for families. And we're just a huge space. So if you went into our space at any given time,
mm-hmm.
you might see some school-age and middle school kids playing Dungeons and Dragons mm-hmm. with our youth Dungeon Master leaders.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a thriving Dungeons and Dragons program going on. You might see tabletop gaming. You might see just families relaxing, reading books, asking us for reading suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
We love to give reading suggestions. You might see just people hanging out and letting kids play with what we call the Nautilus, which is a big San Francisco-themed interactive play center in three languages. And just a lot of cool exhibits, book displays. We try to curate something that's really an experience for kids and their families and their caregivers.
Now, I've brought several children there over the years. And the best part for me is, you know, because children will tend to have an all-consuming passion. One was dinosaurs, another one was sharks, another one was airplanes. And I love the fact that you can just say the word and the librarians in the children's section will just go, oh, here it is. And there's a huge section of whatever mm-hmm. is their passion. I love that because it solidified their love of the library, that they could just find all of these books.
That's so lovely. Thank you for loving and appreciating that. I mean, we get asked so many times for dinosaur books. We could go there with our eyes closed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We are always happy to help people find things, even if it's more obscure than dinosaurs mm-hmm. and trains, which I think are the most popular.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, and it's also, I should point out to our listening audience that it's it's a safe space for small children. If you're worried about, if you're worried, there are people there. It's sort of separate from the rest of the hubbub and to-do.
Yeah, it is. We're on the second floor of the main library, and it's a little bit separated.
Mm-hmm.
It is still a public space,
sure.
and so we don't restrict the space to only people with children. But we main children's center librarians, all the children's librarians in the system. I think we really try to take care of our patrons and look after them. So if we see a child running out onto the landing and standing at the top of the staircase, we will race after them and try to get the caregiver. But please, caregivers, watch your little one, because they can very quickly get out of your eyesight and run right out there, and we might not always be there. But yeah, we really try to be there for our patrons and support our families and make a very safe and welcoming space.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I want to, like, we've got a few more minutes, so I want, are there any other programs or events that you would like to let our listening audience know about?
I'll tell you about one big program that we are planning. And that is our annual Effie Lee Morris program. It's named for the first coordinator of children's services in San Francisco, the late Effie Lee Morris. She was also the first Black president of the Public Library Association, very distinguished lady. And so this series in her honor focuses on literature created by African-American, Latinx, and other communities of color, authors and illustrators that highlight the experiences of communities of color and other BIPOC communities. So we are going to have the Effie Lee Morris lecture with the Thai American writer Christina Suntornvat on Saturday, April the 6th.
April?
So that's a long way away.
Oh, okay.
But I wanted to mention it, not only so people mark their calendars and come back and look at our program announcements, but also to tell you that we are doing a huge initiative with some of our partner schools in the San Francisco Public School District, so that we do enrichment programming and a book club in the schools specifically focused on this year's Effie Lee Morris speakers books. So we're really looking forward to that. We've partnered with a couple of schools now this year and last year, and we're really looking forward to bringing the Effie Lee Morris lecture more into the community with a school-based book club.
Well, if people want to get a kind of a head start on that, is there a place they can go to see a list of those books?
Look up any books by the author Christina Suntornvat. I'll spell her last name. S like Sam, O-O-N like Nancy, T like Tom, O-R-N like Nancy, V like Victory, A-T like Tom.
Okay.
And Christina with an H. And if you look up Christina Suntornvat, you'll see she's written so many books at all different grade levels, fiction, nonfiction, series books, graphic novels. And so what we're doing with our partner, SFUSD Schools, is bringing an enhanced reading experience through a school-based book club. And then we invite the kids and their families from the schools to join us, as they did this year, for the special lecture with the author on April the 6th. But that is also open to the entire community.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I have a question, not necessarily about children's books, but about banned books.
Ooh, I love that. My favorite subject.
Okay, so what do you guys have a Banned Books 2023? Can you just give us the slightest bit of information about that?
Yeah, so every location is going to celebrate it in the library in its own way. In the Children's Center, we are going to have an exhibit, and that's going to run for Banned Books Week, which is this year, October 1st through 7th. And this was actually my idea, which I'm super proud of. We're going to highlight the work of Amanda Gorman, who, a former youth poet laureate, who is an extraordinary poet who read at the presidential inauguration.
Yes.
And her books were actually restricted in a Florida school, especially her poem called The Hill We Climb, which was the poem she read at the inauguration. It's an incredibly beautiful and moving poem. So we're going to display the full text of that poem on one of our bulletin boards in celebration of her work, in celebration of the fact that Black history and Black culture are everyone's history and everyone's culture, and key and core in the American experience. And so that's one of our contributions to Banned Books Week. We can connect your listeners with banned books of every description. We love banned books. We champion the freedom to read and just the freedom to walk into a safe, welcoming, beautiful space like our public libraries, where we don't ask you any questions. You respect the space. enjoy it, read, and go wherever your imagination takes you.
Well, with that, Lynn Davidson, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, and especially for I know you're really busy today, so to take the time out to talk about what's going on at the library, I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. As always, Marilyn, this is one of my favorite things to do, is talking to you and to your listeners. So I wish everybody a beautiful day. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, people of Earth, there's books, there's plays, there's agencies that help you. There's all kinds of things. If your mind isn't touched, it's because you're making it not be touched. It's a choice. It's a choice. And you know what else? You have a choice to continue listening, because Mr. Ford will be pleasuring your ear hole. I'll be back next week. Until then, ta-ta and toodly-doo.
Children, go, I'll sing you. How shall I sing you? I'm going to sing you one by one. One for the little bitty baby who was born. Born, born.